Oh, no, we can't start. Okay, I call to order the House Committee on Education for, oh my, the 29th of April already?
Yes.
That flies. So anyway, we have two public hearings today, but before we start, I would like to welcome the part of the Camby School Board.
That's right.
I understand you guys are here, so welcome to the Education Committee, and hopefully you guys are not causing too much trouble here. As the former union rep for right next door, North Clackamas, we want to, you know, make sure that you guys aren't causing trouble down here. So anyway, with that, I want to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 588. Richard?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 588 allows school districts and public charter schools to be considered a single legal entity for the purpose of public charter school law if the charter is the only school in the district and a few other enumerated conditions are met. It declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015.
Okay. Senator Roman.
Thank you, illustrious chair of the Education Committee in the House.
Yes.
Representative Doherty and the rest of the committee. For the record, my name is Arne Roblin. I am the senator from Senate District 5. And I'm here to talk about a simple little bill that does something that makes common sense, and I hope that you will all agree, because there are a number of very small districts in our state. One in my district is Reedsport, but they're all over the state. And they have decided, because of the organization of schools, to make all of their school district a charter school district. It allows them a little bit of variation with respect to some of the other rules that are out. It allows them to get some money for planning to try to reorganize as they've gotten smaller. Many of these districts are getting smaller. They're in these declining enrollments, which makes their ability to keep their staff harder and harder. But this is one way that they have come to understand how they can deal with that economics. The law requires some specific things, and currently the law requires that if you are a charter school, you have to have an audit. If you are a school district, you have to have an audit. So in the case of the school district, they get an audit, and then they turn around and hire the auditor to do an audit of the school district again, because the whole school district is a charter school. And so they have two identical audits. And this bill says they only need to do one, which to me makes a whole lot of sense. And then they can make their decisions based on the audit of the school district and not have to go and have a second audit done. Most of them got to the point where they don't hire a different auditor for each one, you know, because the board is the board. But and so it doesn't cost a lot, but it seems to be a kind of redundant thing that makes little sense in the scheme of things as we move forward. And I think in talking to the Reedsport School District and talking to a few of the other school districts in the same place, they all have done this because that's kind of what the rules say they have to do, but I think this streamlines that and makes it better for all of us.
Okay.
And I'd love to answer any questions that the illustrious House members
are there here any questions?
Have, except from Lou Frederick. I'm not going to take any questions.
But he's not here. He's late.
Get him away.
He has to find someplace else.
Okay.
I do have one question, and you gave the example of the audits. Are there any other areas of duplication that...
I have asked a few times. As you know, I'm trying to work hard in the Senate Education Committee, and they did not identify any of those other things that were up causing them this kind of concern. I think over time we need to look at those, and I think we also need to look at, are there things that we have allowed charter schools to do that we don't allow regular public schools to do that might be advantageous to both. So I think we should look at both of those, because, you know, we get that constant refrain about they've given all these restrictions and when are they going to cut things down. I think we should look at that, but I haven't heard, it has not been identified to me that there's things that need to be changed.
Because I could see maybe some other duplicate reports to ODE, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think ODE has been good about that. They just give us the report about the school, and either one, I think they're okay. And it's easy for the board, since it's the same for both the school district and the charter school. They changed a little bit, but it's easy for them to talk to themselves and pass the reports on.
Okay, any other questions?
But that has not been a problem that I've heard.
Of the senator.
Well, I'm a little disappointed that he didn't think we were all illustrious.
I did say that later.
So, anyway.
He's right.
We go back a ways, so.
All right. So I may be just confused, and hopefully clarify this for me. Did I understand you to say that there were subsets or charters that had been part of the regular public district that peeled off, and that's why they're...
No.
No. Okay.
What I'm saying is that the school district made a decision that they would make their whole school district a public charter district. And that's what Reedsport did. So they were a school district in Reedsport. Mm-hmm. And they had public. They were a public school. They had a bunch of little school buildings, and they did their work. They made a decision a few years ago to become a charter district. So now all of their schools are in charter schools. It's one district, all chartered. So the elementary is called, the high school is called the Reedsport Charter High School. Okay. And so what now they are, the entities, if you're outside, they're the same entity. They, mm-hmm. The charter school and the district are the same entity. And they're saying that we don't need to do two reports from the same entity. That's, yeah. But they didn't, they were a public school entirely, not a charter district. And then they went to a charter district as a whole group. Okay. And in so doing, they got some planning money, some other kinds of stuff that helped them through a very difficult time when they were losing enrollment. But it's never been, they peeled off. They came off as a whole district in their particular case. And I think that's true of all of these full charter school districts.
Thank you. I just hadn't heard that concept before.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. If not, thank you very much,
thank
Senator.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Well, we'll do. We'll do. And the old, did Lori not know?
And if you sit next to her long enough.
I could be illustrious, too.
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay, that was the only other person signed up. Anybody else want to speak on House Bill or Senate Bill 588? Okay, if not, I close the public hearing on House Bill 588 and open up a public hearing on House Bill, or Senate Bill, we keep doing this on both sides, on Senate Bill 287.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 287 deletes a provision that authorizes teachers who are licensed and properly endorsed by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, the TSPC, to practice speech-language pathology without obtaining license from the State Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology. It becomes operative July 1, 2016. It creates a grandfather clause for the teachers who were licensed and properly endorsed before that date.
Okay, thank you very much. We had actually three people signed up.
Oh. So I can start, Chairwoman Daugherty. I'm Erin Haig, and I'm the new Executive Director for the Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology. And the TSPC board has worked closely with ours in putting this bill together to streamline the licensing for the speech-language pathologists in our state. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to our Vice Chair of our board for more information on the background.
Okay, thank you.
So my name's Wendy Gunter. I'm a speech-language pathologist. I'm currently vice chair of the Board of Examiners for Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology. What you see before you really reflects the work of the Board of Examiners since before 2008. And it involves the cooperation of a large number of stakeholders. In the summer of 2010, we collaborated with the Oregon Speech-Language Hearing Association to hold town halls across the state in Pendleton and Medford to Newport to really get the information from current practitioners about what the concerns were. We held a roundtable discussions at the annual conference starting in October 2010, and we've elicited feedback at every annual conference since then. We've had consistent multi-agency meetings since July 2014, which include Oregon Department of Education, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, Oregon Speech Language Oregon Speech and Hearing Association, and we've really brainstormed solutions prior to bringing this to you. We've also had ongoing small groups and one-on-one meetings with our former executive director, Sandy Liebold, and Vicki Chamberlain, the TSPC executive director. All that work has brought us to the agreement that there are a number of benefits for this bill. One, it improves the consistency of the licensing requirements across the state. So there's a single standard process and a single criteria for licensure for speech-language pathologists. It also gives the Board of Examiners the regulatory authority across work settings for speech pathologists, so regardless of whether they're in the hospital or the schools or in a skilled nursing facility. And that's really consistent with the mandate that the governor's office gave us to protect consumers across Oregon. So it allows everyone to come under that regulatory authority. It also aligns the licensing process with the current scope of practice for speech-language pathologists. Initially, when this originated out of teacher standards and practices, we really were speech correction teachers in the schools. My current practice includes pediatric dysphagia, working with neonates in the acute care setting. So we don't just work in the schools and we don't just work on speech. And then it also increases the quality of care for Oregonians because there's a really consistent continuing education requirement and standard for our scope of practice and for competency in clinic. So all of that above lets us know that we really anticipate positive benefits. We don't see any known risks or any known opposition, and it overwhelmingly passed in the Senate. So we're excited.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, my name is Susan Betcher.
Thank you.
I'm used to teaching, so I talk to big rooms all the time. Probably be too loud. My name is Susan Betcher, and I'm a faculty member at the University of Oregon, and I work in the Communication Sciences and Disorders program. I've been at the U of O for 15 years, and I've been a licensed speech-language pathologist for 20 years. Today, I'm here representing the Department of Speech and Hearing Sciences at Portland State, the School of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Pacific University, and the Communication Disorders and Sciences program at the University of Oregon. All three train future speech-language pathologists. The program directors and faculty of the three programs stand united in our support of Senate Bill 287. We believe that universal licensure will make important changes in student training and in the care of individuals with communication disorders. We've enjoyed our long and fruitful relationship with TSPC, but recognize that speech-language pathologists are not the same as teachers, nor are speech-language pathology graduate students the same as teacher candidates. It's imperative that all speech-language pathologists in the state, regardless of the setting they work in or the age of the client they serve, all are held to the same high standards set by the Oregon Board of Examiners for speech-language pathology and audiology. Universal license will make certain of that. As a result, anyone who receives the services of a speech-language pathologist in the state of Oregon will be guaranteed a highly qualified provider. The move to universal licensure also reflects the trend in the country and will bring Oregon more in line with the rest of the country. So we support the passage of Senate Bill 287 without any reservation.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair, it sounds like you guys have worked on this together, and I always like to see, you know, folks that are the specialists work together and be part of the process and the solution for whatever problem there was. And I guess just to put on the record, other than just creating what you consider to be higher standards for the license process or for the, you know, the educational programs, what was really the problem?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll let Wendy. She's the leader.
Anyway. Any of you.
Yeah, it was a dual system. So for a licensee, the possibility of having to carry two separate licenses, two separate continuing education requirements, two separate licensing fee renewals, and different cycles. Mm-hmm. For consumers, somebody could be licensed by one or the other or both. So if a consumer had a complaint, they'd first have to figure out, well, in fact, it's the way it currently is, they first have to figure out who licensed that speech pathologist and then go through what might be two totally different complaint processes. So, yeah, that really, I think, was our impetus, was it was duplicity that didn't benefit in any way.
Okay. So my follow-up would just simply be this. I had a mother who had, you know, two strokes, and I was the daughter that took her to that care for the four or five different types of therapy. Mm-hmm. And then I also have been a teacher for 42 years and deal with folks from your occupation who come mm-hmm. to get students out of my class to treat them one-on-one or sometimes in a small group of maybe two or three. And to me, I mean, definitely the specialty is the same. But I'm just assuming that in this licensing that that there is something that goes along with the different types of styles or the different types of issues that you deal with, you know, when you're dealing with different folks. Dealing with my mom after a second stroke and dealing, you know, with a 14-year-old, I mean, those are different stories.
Completely.
And they're for different reasons, and there's, you know, different types of problems that you're trying to solve or work with. So I guess I'd just appreciate it if you would just speak to that and how you folks think your process and this piece of legislation will really assist you in helping with those issues as well.
Do you want me to speak to that?
You can speak to it, and I'll add.
Okay.
I do have a piece that I'd love
yeah.
to
say. Yeah. So it doesn't really change the current state of things. We do really hold one license with Board of Examiners, and then that exemption exists for teacher standards and practices for people who practice solely in the public schools. So part of our preparation and the expectation for our national standards for clinical competency are that you're competent in all those. And actually, we do sometimes take disciplinary action from the Board of Examiner standpoint for someone who doesn't practice competently. So that's definitely something we're very comfortable regulating and have in the past, and we'd anticipate that first of all, the preparation would be appropriate, but if it isn't, then we've remediated people who have practiced outside of their scope of competency.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? I kind of have go ahead.
Yeah. I think from the education side, what it does is it doesn't have us answering to two different accrediting things. So currently we're licensed as teachers in the state of Oregon, and we actually are not classroom teachers. TSPC does a beautiful job of licensing teachers and regulating that, but it leaves your graduate training programs sort of as the square peg in the round hole. So we're constantly trying to sort of map onto all of these teaching practices. It has us have our students doing things that they don't need to do. It makes us less competitive than out-of-state graduate programs because we have students that have to come in and meet all these different criteria, which to people from outside the state of Oregon makes no sense at all. So it really, I think it will really streamline that process, and it allow us to target a little bit of teaching. We are ever, well, you know, as instructors, we're ever looking for that, the next 10 minutes we can take to do something, you know, more targeted.
Okay.
Just a way of background as a comment and then a question is, actually, I was a general speech major at Portland State, and right across the hall was the speech and hearing department, which I was a student secretary in. And I was over there just doing the work for them because the coursework was too hard. And I know that the coursework, and then the whole thing was going through and saying, you know, to get ASHA certified. And
yes.
And I think with speech pathologists, there is a national organization whose standards are extremely high. And then you have the state, you know, Oregon Association of Speech, which is the same sort of thing. So I know, at least unless it's been watered down, that the criteria is very, very, very high for speech and language pathologists. And I kind of akin you a little bit to physical therapists, that, you know, from here on up, is that you can deal with the 14-year-old and the stroke and the whatever, just as physical therapists deal with lots of things. So so I guess my question is, I was a little leery going, how come they want to do this? Until I saw that OSHA said, is what you were looking at, because the standards are extremely high in speech and language, very, very high. So as long as you've got that, then that would cover the a lot of the requirements that TSPC would want.
And Chair Doherty, members of the committee, if I could just add that the folks who currently have the teacher's license, as long as they keep renewing it, that's all grandfathered. Right. So we're not hurting those right. folks at all either by this.
And I guess with the question, I would assume a lot of those could also be OSHA and ASHA certified.
Right.
That's kind of what you had to do. So anyway, any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else want to speak on House Bill or Senate Bill 287? Okay, with that. Also, I was hard of hearing, so every time the audiologist had to do testing, you know, practice, I got my hearing tested 422 times in 3 years. So anyway, okay, with that, nobody else, I close the public hearing on Senate Bill 287. Anything else? Okay, we have a couple of reminders. There will be no committee on this Friday or next Monday. The floor session may go rather long, so we're going to do that. But we are meeting next Wednesday and next Friday. Okay. So put that in your calendars. Okay? All the Everything's posted, and we'll be working bills on Wednesday and Friday. We'll be voting on bills Wednesday and Friday. Okay, anything else? Chair with that, adjourn the House. Okay, anything else? Chair with that, adjourn.